This is part two of the October 6, 2005 recording discussing day seven in the Kitzmiller et al. Versus Dover Area School Board trial.
Was pretty much the creationist dream curriculum already. This is exactly the stuff that the creationists say, oh yes, this is the evolution we accept. We just don't accept anything beyond that. We think it was special creation. And so, honestly, the creationists started out with about the best curriculum that they can get these days in Dover. The difficulty was part of the issue began when they had to get a new biology textbook, so a new edition of Kenneth Miller's and Joe Levine's biology textbook. That was one sort of thing that got the school board moving. And another issue was that the Pennsylvania state science standards came out, and the Dover Area School District did a practice test on the biology test, and they found, wow, there's a lot of evolution in this biology test that's based on the state science standards. So the science teachers did start to upgrade evolution in the curriculum, and this probably also was part of the instigator behind the fights in Dover. This was part of the inspiration for the school board to react against, even though the teachers were just following the state mandates and attempting to get their students prepared for college, which is why these standards exist. They're college prep standards. So that was interesting. And who knows what exactly will happen in Dover after this trial is over. The teachers may go back to the status quo. You would hope that they would feel like they have the freedom now to really teach evolution as it is in the standards, to teach it as a full scientific theory. But you never know. And this kind of situation is extremely common across the U.S. Creationists, intelligent design proponents, will go on and on about the dogmatism being forced on students in the public schools. But the honest situation is that many, many places, they get a very light treatment of evolution. They leave it to the end of the quarter or the end of the semester. If they run out of time, too bad, we can't do evolution. And oftentimes they will just treat it very gingerly. They'll only talk about small-scale evolution and not, for example, common ancestry of humans and chimpanzees, which is as uncontroversial as anything ever is in science. You might argue about the details of the relative importance of natural selection, genetic drift, symbiosis, and some of these other processes, but common ancestry, in the sense of humans and chimps, for example, it's established as the round Earth. There's no real doubt about that. But that's the kind of thing they would not. The teachers avoided teaching in Dover, and you could see that it was because they didn't want the flack that they would get from the school board and from various parents if they taught this straight science. So this kind of thing is extremely common in the U.S. And I'm not sure if there's any hard numbers on it, but sooner or later someone's going to do a study, and we'll get some idea of how prevalent this kind of thing is. The National Science Teachers Association did an informal web poll and got numbers saying that something like 30% of teachers said that they experienced significant problems teaching evolution due to getting pressure from parents or students or administration. Let's see. I had to leave town, actually, after the first teacher spoke. The next witness, I believe, was Bertha Spar, the science teacher, the senior science teacher in Dover, and she's worked in Dover Area High School for about 40 years, and she was the key personality that was trying to reach some sort of agreement with the board so that they could resolve this issue and move on with their lives, get their textbooks, and do their jobs. And so I'll have to read the transcript and report on exactly what she said later. One thing I should mention, though, is that the Discovery Institute, which has distanced themselves from the Dover policy, they played more of a role than people realize in the origins of this fight in Dover Area School District. A video, Icons of Evolution, was sent to William Buckingham, I believe. And he was shown to school board members, and this convinced them that the modern science was against evolution, that textbooks were lying to students, that students were being misled, and that evolution was a dying theory, and that intelligent design was the great new thing coming along. evidently this video and perhaps some other videos and other materials that they received. So this video was then forced on the science teachers, who were told to watch it. And this was one of the very, very early events in the development of the Dover Intelligent Design Anti-Evolution Policy. So I'm not sure we've heard the full story on that yet, but and maybe Bertha Sparr will talk more about it. But it was very clear that was one of the instigating factors in this case. So that is about it for now. One thing I think people should do is go check out some of the intelligent design blogs. Especially, I want to mention there's a blog by Paul Nelson up on the Intelligent Design the Future blog, which is run by the Discover Institute. And he mentions me specifically. And then he starts to recount his experience working on a case, which happened to be Edwards V. Aguillard back in 1987. He worked for Wendell Byrd, who was the creationist lawyer who was running the creationist side of that case. And his conclusion is that lawsuits never resolve anything. And he may well be right in terms of the sort of socio-political situation. I'm not sure. I think sometimes court cases do resolve these sorts of things. But one thing that has been established in this case, beyond any doubt, is that intelligent design really is creationism. There's just no way around it. It was clearly a substitution that occurred after Edwards V. Aguillard. And the other point I should mention, and this will be established even if, for some reason the plaintiffs end up losing the case, it's beyond any doubt that, intelligent design was just a literally creationism in a cheap tuxedo, like everyone has been saying for years. But the other important thing to mention is that, many of the intelligent design proponents must have known about this. They must have seen early drafts of Pandas. Many of them, including Paul Nelson, are reviewers on the book of Pandas and People. And yet they never told anyone that this was born as a creationist book, and that they just literally relabeled it Intelligent Design after the Edwards decision went against them. I have yet to see any mention of the Pandas drafts on any Intelligent Design blog. I think people should start asking the intelligent design proponents, why didn't you mention this minor fact years ago? Why have you been telling us that intelligent design is not creationism? And why are you not addressing the issue now that it's right in front of you? The origin of the intelligent design movement, the origin of the first work systematically using the phrase intelligent design, which was of Pandas and People. First, why was that a biology textbook for ninth graders, for public schools? Is that really any kind of way to start a so-called scientific movement? And second, why were you shy about using the term creation, and why did you switch to intelligent design right after the court decision? And why didn't you tell anybody about that? I think those questions will as people start to realize the kind of evidence that's been introduced in the Kitzmiller case, I think those questions will increase in frequency. But we'll see. They may attempt to stonewall this for the foreseeable future. But I think it is an important point that not only is it just like all the real creation watchers have said, intelligent design is creationism. They've been saying that for 15 years. Not only that, but many of the core intelligent design people knew it was and have been misleading people for over a decade. I think those would be interesting questions to ask. Maybe that's me personally. Maybe I'm just way too involved in this case. We'll see. But that's sort of my final thought for the day. The trial resumes next Wednesday. I believe we are going to hear a few more expert witnesses. I think next week is the last week of the plaintiff's case. So we'll probably hear a few more expert witnesses and a few more plaintiffs. The two expert witnesses that are left are Brian Alters, a education professor. He has a joint appointment at McGill and Harvard, and so he is, and he's written books on evolution education. And then Kevin Padian, who's a paleontologist at the University of California, Berkeley. I think he's one of the curators of the museum there, and his expertise is the origin of birds from dinosaurs. That's one of his areas of expertise, but he's also very familiar with the fossil record in general, and especially with all the new developments that have occurred in the 1990s, with both in methods in paleontology and in actual fossils that have been discovered. So that's what we have to look forward to next week, and I will pick it up with you next Wednesday.